Well, let's talk about the soybeans right now. It is a good time and an exciting time in the world of soybeans, isn't it?
I think it's exciting generally, and it's important to remember that, and it's important to remember the long-term nature of what soy can do, because that's what we do at USB, or really that our farmer leaders do, is invest towards the future. And I think where we are now, you know, we're in a down period in terms of commodity prices, certainly relative to where we've been the last couple of years. That's a challenging environment. You know, farmers are having to contend with high interest rates. Input costs are high. They're not what they were, you know, in 2022 when we had the fertilizer crisis, but they're still incredibly high, and farmers are, you know, feeling a squeeze there. So, you know, that's difficult, but that also underscores why it's so important to look towards the future and see what the opportunities are going to be for the future. I think it's also critical to look at the bright spots that are unfolding in the marketplace now. You know, overall demand for soy remains incredibly strong. You have a large South American crop collectively that is kind of weighing on the markets right now. It's also, you know, it's provided some value opportunities for other buyers. We're in Brazil's peak export window right now. But let's look at the bright side of what's happening here domestically in the United States. We have this transformation that's undergoing, or that's unfolding right now, that really ripples across the whole soy value chain. You rewind a couple of years, lots of investments and announcements of renewable diesel plants coming online in California and the Gulf and other parts of the country. Higher future demand for soybean oil. Well, what does the industry have to do to get to that point? It has to build more crush. You don't just get beans from the field and turn them into renewable fuels. You have to have crush. So this wave of crush investment that's been unfolding over the last couple of years, and this year I think we're going to have, you know, four or five plants come online, at least based off of the expected start and announcement dates. With that, with more domestic processing capacity, that means more local points of delivery for farmers, particularly in areas that have been historically underserved. And that means money back in farmers' pockets. And in a time when we're in a down commodity price environment, any money back there is absolutely critical. But it's not just about moving volume. And that is the challenge of working in a commodity space. It's also about investing and looking forward to spots where you can find additional pockets of value. And that's why, you know, USB and the farmers who lead it are looking at innovations that can impact the consumer marketplace, that can come to the fore, that can, you know, really harness the versatility of soy and add to the utility of what people, you know, are using and seeing. So take an innovation like renewable diesel fuel made from soybean oil. It's going to burn cleaner. It has less particulate matter. It's beneficial for consumers anywhere in that area. Or other consumer-oriented things like Goodyear tires or bar and chain oil or investment in public goods, investment to, you know, have greater stability and longevity in asphalt that is made in part from soy, or investment to expand the draft of the Lower Mississippi River to allow greater economies of scale for transportation, for larger vessels, for decreased transportation costs or greater efficiency. These are the ways that soy is showing up and how it impacts so much of the world around us, but also I think sets the stage for an even brighter future.
Well, and you mentioned that recent investments in the Lower Mississippi dredging project, something that is hugely important to supply and demand issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hate it that we've had so many reminders these last couple years of just how critical infrastructure is. You know, it's you never truly appreciate it until something goes wrong. And we're here in the nation's capital. We're not far from Baltimore, where the Key Bridge collapsed just a few weeks ago. And you already see some things shift around there. You know, about 1% of our whole soybean exports were going through Baltimore. So not a huge percentage, but still substantial. But just as critically, that's a port that is absolutely important for bringing farm equipment into the country. And so when you think about investing for a resilient system of infrastructure and connectivity, that's essential for making supply meet demand. That is literally where the rubber hits the road to bring markets together. So investing towards you know, greater efficiency along the Mississippi River. You know, we're looking potentially at some of the other ports like Port of Houston for scaling up meal exports there. We've already invested money and along with a number of other states towards expanding the port at Grays Harbor in western Washington state. That's a meal export terminal, presently exports about 3 million tons annually. It would be doubling the capacity to 6. And that is going to be incredibly important in the years to come as we're producing more meal on the strength of more crush, which is beneficial for animal agriculture at home, but it's also beneficial for animal agriculture producers around the world. And us having greater economies of scale for shipping out of the Pacific Northwest, having crush facilities that are going to be a draw area for meal going out of the Pacific Northwest, that makes us more competitive, particularly for those Southeast Asian markets where we really see a lot of opportunity for growth in soy meal exports. So it's this combination of domestic investment in, you know, existing commodity space, in the energy space, but you also see the impact that it has in animal ag and the impact that it has in international markets as well. It's the beauty of soy. It all fits together.
Well, and then speaking of, you know, USDA had their census of agriculture, and it looks like more soybeans are being grown.
Well, we'll see what comes out with. We have the plantings report came out at the end of March, and we were looking at 86.5 million acres of soybeans, and interesting shift there. Some of that potentially coming out of corn. So you had some corn move into cotton and soy. That's really in the headlines, but we'll see what goes in the ground. You know, we don't have a full reconciliation of that, I think, really, until we get to the survey at the end of June, where, you know, farmers are reporting of what actually went in the ground, not necessarily what got intended, because, you know, not to sound like Captain Obvious here, but Mother Nature is always heard from during the growing season. And if it's planting and you see delays on something, you can see last-second crop shifts. It happens all the time. So, you know, but if we're looking at this right now, under trend yields, we'd be looking at a crop of about 4.5 billion bushels this year. So very strong crop on 86.5 million acres. But that's, of course, all contingent upon crop development. But the crop is getting in the ground, I think, ahead of pace already this year.
And it seems like, you know, it seems like the soybean checkoff is doing a lot of things. Like you're talking about the diversification of the soybean and the different uses and everything. It seems like if you're looking at any of the commodities, soybeans got to be the top of the list of figuring out different ways to use soy.
Well, we have the benefit of working with an incredibly versatile seed. It's funny, we refer to soybean as an oil seed. It's really only 20% oil, 80% meal. But the things you can do with all of that is, I mean, it seems like the list grows and grows and grows. Just last week, I met with a finalist of the Soy Innovation Challenge, which is an initiative that we kicked off, I think, in the fall. And we had over 70 applicants from around the world come in and look at things that they could do with soy, and specifically soy meal, because we're going to need to be moving more and more meal in the years to come. What sort of novel innovations can come out there? What are other applications of soy and soy meal that, you know, can solve other challenges that are out there? So, you know, a couple, you know, exciting inciting innovators involved. There's New S, which is working on a soy-based skin for healing, among other things, burn victims and allowing for faster wound closure. We have renewable green composites, and they're working on soy-based plastics and really getting, you know, some thinness down on the in terms of what they're able to do. So, you know, strong technical piece there. We have Clean Label Solutions, which is you know, looking at the intersection of, you know, of soy and dairy, and how you can you know, potentially have some cost savings for farmers, you know, through an innovative feeding process. And then we also have a Cellifil, which is looking at a soy based foam for cushions. Now, there are soy based foams out there. This one, or there are foams out there that do utilize soy, but I believe this is over 80% soy content, primarily from hulls, which are, you know, an afterthought of it. So I love that there's so many innovators coming together and catalyzing around soy. But, you know, American agriculture and what we produce, it's really one of the things to be proud of in this country. You know, you mentioned the census of agriculture earlier. I was taking a look at it earlier this year. We're a nation of 340 million people, thereabout. We got under 3 1.5 million farmers in this country, farmers and ranchers. Less than 1% of the population farms. I'm not a farmer. I've never been a farmer. I will never be able to be a farmer. I don't have the skill set, risk tolerance, and tenacity to do it. So it is a livelihood and business profession that I respect immensely. And I think it's important for all of us to remember that, because when you're just 1% of the population, it's easy to overlook the full contributions. But American farmers punch way above their weight in terms of what they're able to produce, not just for the U.S., but for the world as a whole. So I actually put out a video recently. It's on our YouTube channel. It's also on my LinkedIn, showcasing this. It's a moment to, I think, be really proud of what we're able to, of what the U.S. is able to bring through its farmers.
Absolutely. Mac, thanks so much for taking time. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. It's great to see you again.
Mac Marshall, United Soybean Board, joining us here on this edition of Farm Talk.